Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Hello, Chicago Wave fans. Jeff Carlin and, of course, John Cass here with you, and wanted to start things off a little differently. I know normally this is where you hear the dulcet tones of John Cass waxing poetically about the world we live in and how we got here, but we first wanted to kick things off with thanking you for taking time to listen every week and download our podcast and subscribing for those of you who do, and commenting and sharing, because that really helps us. That's good for the podcast. It's good, healthy routine. I just want to say thank you, and I'm sure John, of course, is thankful for that.
You know, I, Jeff, I love hanging out with you and the readers and listeners. What's important is not, you know, what I'm writing about today or tomorrow, what I wrote about yesterday. What's important is that you all get your butts in the chair. And you all subscribe to John Cass right. News, because I can't make a living without
exactly.
You. And I love you guys, so thank you. Love you.
Yes, and not to cheapen our thank you, but we do, you know, if you could, and we know you come back for what we do, be sure to give us a like again if you haven't, or like individual episodes, rate us. You know, every time you do stuff like that, it helps us pop up in other searches when people are looking for politics of the day. And tell your friends, if you can get one person to listen, you know, that helps us a lot. And so it's self-serving in a sense, but really we do this for you guys, so you don't pay anything for it, and it's for you. So help us, help you, help us, and please enjoy this wonderful episode of the Chicago Way featuring the great Charles Lipson.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall-style attitude to power, and it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Well, there are all sorts of things going on. We have to have Charles Lipson, our friend, the University of Chicago Professor Emeritus, RITSMA Chair, in with us today because, well, we have to sort all this out. For example, the tech bros are hanging on with Trump, and let's see, Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel will be up for a hearing in a few days, and the deep state wants to peel their skin. And then you got, what else we got?
Let's talk about everybody's favorite grandmother, Karen Best.
Okay.
Yes, the fairy godmother we don't want.
Really? And she thought it was going to be an easy job and would lead up to being the next governor of California, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's not working out now.
I would say not. I would say that what happened when Trump spoke with her,
yeah,
besides the fact that he seemed to know as much about the LA fires as anybody in the room, is that he got Karen Bass on record as saying all of this is going to happen, the clearing out and all the rest is going to happen very, very fast. So if it doesn't, people are going to be replaying that line of hers. She had a reasonable point, it seemed to me, in saying we want everything to be safe.
But yeah, I've got a little bit of audio for those who didn't see it and who may be oblivious. You know, Trump was in Yeah,
nice
job. But he was in California after going to North Carolina, which, you know, he said he's going to go there. I'm going to show up. I'll be there. If I win, I'll be the guy. I'll come out. And he did it. So here's what they're sitting down, big conference, and it's a bunch of citizens who are trying to get answers.
And the number one thing that we are going to do immediately, and you will see this happen, is to clear out the debris. And, you know, we're concerned right now over the weekend because of the potential rain, but we are going to move as fast as we can, but we want you to be safe, and we want you to be back in your homes immediately.
But the people are willing to clean out their own debris. It doesn't cost a lot.
Yes, and they can.
You should let them do it, because by the time you hire contractors, it's going to be 2 years.
If a family...
The people are willing to get a dumpster and do it themselves and clean it out.
And they can.
There's not that much left. It's all incinerated.
That's right.
And, you know, it's just going to take a long time if you do. You can do some of it, but a lot of these people, I know that guy right there that's talking. I know my people. You'll be on that thing tonight, throwing the stuff away, and your site will be, it'll look perfect within 24 hours. And that's what he wants to do. He doesn't want to wait around for 7 months till the city hires some demolition contract. That's
going to
charge him $25,000 to do his lot.
Yeah.
I think you have to, you have emergency powers just like I do, and I'm exercising my emergency powers. You have to exercise them also.
I did exercise them.
Because I looked, I mean, you have a very powerful emergency power, and you can do everything within 24 hours.
Yes. And if individuals want to clear out their property, they can. Well, yes, but you know that you will be able to go back soon.
Mr. President.
We think within a week.
There it is. I mean, like you said, Charles, you know, she is, he's leading from the front, and she's clearly trying to lead from behind in that situation. And I caught this on Twitter, I think, and I just kind of came across it because I've been trying to keep my head out of politics so far this month, just because I'm trying to get
myself. We all appreciate that, Jeff. I mean, really, you can tell that the level is elevated right away.
but the thing that like struck me is Trump in this situation. And, you know, I'm not a fan. I don't think he represents the best of all of us, really. It's his culture. I think, you know, he's got a lot of baggage, as people say. But he won, he's president, and I support him in that. He comes out, and this is what people always talk about. I've never seen it, I've never met him, but he comes out and he knows how to talk to people. He knows how to sniff out BS, and he knows when people are just talking in platitudes, and he knows how to try to get stuff done. Like, where do we start? And that's what he was doing. He's like, give him dumpsters, just let him do it. Let us get this thing rolling. You're not doing anyone any favors by him and hawing and all this. And she comes back, she's like, oh, well, that's what we're doing. We're going to have it done in a week. And it's this high pitched, you know, I don't believe her. But that's what I like about this guy. If I like anything, it's that he clearly gets into a situation where there's urgency and there's need, and he doesn't parse words. He doesn't care about your politics or whatever. He just wants to get people, you know, back to where they want to be.
Only a fool would fight a duel with using a rapier when the other guy has a broadsword. Okay,
that is so true. And I gotta say, you noticed that one thing about Karen Bass. It's in a deep blue city in a deep blue state, maybe less blue now than it used to be, that's for sure.
Sure.
But you noticed that she didn't want to be saying no to anything he said. Nothing he said was she going to contradict. And that was because, probably for two reasons. One is that she knows that he's popular.
Right.
And the other is that she knows that he has a big pulpit and will keep coming back at her.
She also knows he's spiteful, that if she doesn't play along or she goes against him, he will come, you know, he's the pugilist in him, will hit twice as hard.
Oh, right. But I would say that, you know, the proof is in the pudding for a lot of people in California, in a way that is rare to see. And I'll give you an example. I noticed, I was just in Texas, and I noticed that we're paying about $1.50 more per gallon for gas in Chicago. We don't get more services. Services down there are great. There now we have to clear snow, and, you know, we have some problems that they don't have. But the fact is, it's hard to get that comparison going, right, in people's minds beyond those who have specifically lived in those places. But when you see California in this condition, the whole country notices. By the way, what happened in North Carolina, both what happened on the ground.
I drove through there coming back from Christmas.
Oh, tell us about it. What was it like?
You're like going through the aftermath and seeing that, you know, all these were all tourist towns. These were all, you know, they had a niche little camp here and this, and the infrastructure is just gone. Like, there's no roads. Like, there aren't, you know, the roads have been repaired, but they're blocked and they're being repaired. So there's huge delays in trying to get through these areas. You see downtown areas that are just gone and people are, there's debris everywhere, but people are coming together as much as like that Appalachian.
This is months
later. And it still looks like it was, you know, just 3 weeks ago. I mean, the debris is starting to move, but there's nothing there. I mean, there's.
And you know how he played it when he went. First of all, it was brilliant to go there.
Yeah.
As one of his first trips. Secondly, instead of him making a lot of talk, he let the people from there do the talk.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
I mean, the guy's a listener. There's no doubt.
You know, I'm not going to be as harsh on the president as my friend Jeff Carlin, but that's because, you know, we're Americans. We had different viewpoints. But as far as Karen Bass is concerned, I think she finds herself in the middle of a pickle. There's the election coming. She's in trouble. People want to blame somebody. They don't want to blame themselves. They don't want to say, hey, I was all about the Subaru lifestyle, but now they want somebody to blame. So they're going to blame her or Gavin Newsom. Which one gets it first?
They're both going to get it, but yeah. I'll tell you who else is. I'll tell you an additional problem that's going to start making the news very soon and has already begun to, is that the state imposed so many regulations on the insurers.
Yes.
That many of these houses are not insured. These right. people lost everything. It doesn't matter whether it's $1 million house or a $300,000 house, because for most people, that was their biggest asset. That was what they had. And now it's gone. And instead of the insurer replacing it, they have nothing. And they have nothing because of state regulations. I mean, it's very important to say this is not because the insurance companies were bad. There are clearly cases where insurance companies are bad. But this was not one of those cases. This was a case where they didn't want to insure anybody because the state had placed so many regulations that it was virtually impossible to make money there.
Yeah. I mean, and insurance is, you know, it's almost a parlor game in a sense, because they do need to have the advantage, and it's, you know, people are upset, but you need it and that type of thing. And it comes across as being, well, whose fault was it? And at the end of the day, and we can, you know, a little bit of a segue here, but you can see it in the Washington Post. It's evident that Gavin Newsom is only number 9 on their list of, you know, potential all-stars and the Democrats. You know, 6-8 months ago,
he's number 1 on Trump's list of who I'd like to run against.
Well, right. Yeah.
Where's Pritzker, guys?
Well, exactly.
On this Washington Post thing, where they're listing all the top candidates, where's our governor billionaire, J.B. Pritzker?
He's in line for the buffet.
Although I will say, I've seen him a couple times lately, and he's trending downwards in the weight department, which we've talked about here is probably the first indicator that he's building a run. And I think not being on this list, you know, maybe they asked him and he said, no, don't put me on the list. I want to be the dark horse.
I don't think that I think that anybody who wants, there's a huge fight within the Democratic Party, right, yeah. over its future direction. That fight won't be settled until a nominee is picked in 2028, right? Yeah. But there will be an emerging group led, I think, by Fetterman, Elise Slotkin, Midwest sort of moderate center-left Democrats, and they'll be opposed by the coastal people.
Yeah. And, oh, Fetterman for sure, especially after that inauguration sweatshirt and shorts nonsense.
Listen, the people that Charles just mentioned,
right,
are you know, Fetterman and so forth, Slotkin. You know who's not mentioned in that group? Obama. I think his days are past.
I think that's true of all the old leadership.
Yeah.
All of them.
Old guard, yeah. They showed they failed. I mean, they couldn't have failed more dramatically, really. I mean, from ditching your candidate weeks before the election to all of it. I mean, just picking, you know, letting Joe get that far anyway.
They could put Joe's presidential library in his garage.
His basement. It's going to be the basement. Yeah.
Put it in the basement. And Kamala Harris, if she thinks she's going to stage a Nixonian comeback.
Oh, God.
You can't kick Kamala around anymore.
Oh, boy. I mean, you know, Willie Brown's not there to help. She is really in trouble.
Yeah.
And but I think it's more than that. I think it's not just that they don't have a clear leader, because there could be people like Josh Shapiro and so forth who emerge. But the problem is they don't have an agenda. They don't really. My argument, I wonder what you think of this, John and Jeff. My argument is that there was a long arc of building the administrative state. Begins with FDR, and the key player is LBJ and the Great Society programs. And then the last element of that is health care put in place by Obama and John McCain's crucial vote. But Obama puts it in place. What do they actually want to do now? And all Biden wanted to do, leave aside the fact that he still hadn't been told that he's out of office. all he wanted to do was throw more money at the same things and put the new Green Deal at the center of his agenda. It's just not that popular, and it's not a huge deal anyway. So I mean, you know, in terms of, you can't carry the electorate with it in the same way you can with, say, healthcare.
Right.
So I think they're out of ideas as well as leaders.
Part of that is, I think, Trump's assault on what you called didn't earn it in a recent piece that I wrote about. Didn't earn it because DEI is around the necks of the Democrat left, and they can't, I don't think they can escape from that albatross. It's going to hound them.
I think that's exactly right. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think, I mean, we've kind of noted it here in that DEI is on the way out. You've seen it in the corporate world. I mean, so many companies are now, big companies are like, okay, well, the cat's out of the bag. We don't have to bend the knee to this. Let's stop wasting money on it and go. And you're seeing that. I mean, that's the bellwether is the economy of the big companies. We're in a capitalist society.
They're also vulnerable legally.
Right.
You know, if in fact, I mean, DEI is at its heart a discriminatory program.
Right.
You can say it was a good idea to do that discrimination. My argument has been that it was a reasonable and practical adjustment in the first, let's call it 15, 20 years even. After the big acts of the mid-1960s, because Blacks had been denied schooling and
housing and funding
and a lot of other things. But once you are well past that, you're going against a fundamental American notion of equal treatment. Yes. And that's also illegal. And so these corporations and universities are about to find it out, too.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I've written to some of the people in our university over the past month who had things that said, well, we've made sure we have X number of candidates that look like this and X number that look like that. And I wrote them back and I said, are you sure that what you're doing is legal? And I said, even if it's legal this week, I have a feeling it won't be legal next month. Right. And I was right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're the hero of the faculty lounge now.
Oh, they love me.
Everybody wants to bring an extra piece of carrot cake for you, Professor.
Yeah, they throw that. They put it in my face like an old vaudeville act. But all the people that say they speak truth to power, give me an effing break.
They could be on the Tribune editorial board now.
Charles, back to your point about the Dems and kind of the just flailing moment they have. I think they spent the last 10 years and all counter-leverance just to Trump. Like, that was all it was. It was super focused on, this guy, he's the antithesis of Americans because he's, insert your ism there that they want to throw out. And he's clearly shown them that half the country calls BS on everything they're talking about. And that they can't come to grips with that. That's the thing that bothers me the most, is that I get it, right? You don't like what he stands for. Maybe you don't like who he is. You hate his past, whatever it is. You got your reasons, but guess what? Half the country disagrees with you, and to not fall in line and say, okay, fine, I'm not going to stand in the way of what he's doing, or I'm not going to tell him to F off if he calls. That's un-American.
And more than half now. He's been more popular since he's been in office and doing all these things. And yet you have senators like Connecticut's Chris Murphy who are holding up appointments that they know will go through,
right,
most of which have bipartisan support, but they're just holding them up out of spite. And that, I don't know if that's popular in Connecticut, but I can tell you it will hurt the Democratic Party. I think Trump has hurt himself only in one way. In his blanket pardon of all the J6 people, including people who were convicted of assaulting police, he gave the Democrats, the people who said nothing when whole cities burned down, a chance to be the law and order party. I think pardons and commutations for others were not objectionable, but that was a political mistake.
I agree in the sense, Charles, that it comes across as a bad move in my opinion. I agree that like there should be some differentiation there, but I don't think it's going to matter if 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to make hay out of it because promised that he ran on that, first 100 hours I want this to happen, or it's going to be one of my first things, and if you elect me, I'm going to do it for you. And he did
promises
it. If he
made,
hadn't
promises
done,
kept.
Right. Yeah. It would have hurt him more.
I've got one that's outside the box, Jeff and Charles.
Yeah.
We've been talking about the Democrats reacting to Trump, but we're not talking about the Republicans. Now I just tweeted out and wrote about Sean Davis, the co-founder of the Federalist, singling out Mitch McConnell and saying that his whole network should be, as Davis said, Mitch McConnell's whole network should be pulled root and branch and, like, I guess, applied sulfur and fire to it, and so it won't grow back again. Because I think that the Republican confrontation between each other, between themselves, has not really been discussed enough. And I wonder what you guys think of what Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel referenced in the coming days,
and RFK Jr.
and RFK Jr. mean for the Republican.
Let me make a couple of comments about it. The first thing is that when you have a country that has two parties, and essentially only two parties,
right, unfortunately,
you're bound to have cleavages within each party,
right?
And the important thing to remember is that these are people who have to be elected at the local level.
Right.
Bingo.
So it's true that the president has enormous leverage, but when the president tries to get through a tax bill in the House of Representatives with a one vote margin to begin with. At this point, he may have by spring, he may have three or four, because the people who've left to join his administration, they can't be replaced. Senators can be replaced by appointment. Right. But House members require an election. And
People's House.
Yeah, the earliest ones can come in a few months. But the if you're a Republican congressman from, let's say, upstate New York, you want the what are called the SALT deductions, the state and local taxes, which Trump took off last time. But when he tries to renew the tax bill, they will want to do that. Now, he will say, I don't want to do it, and I may try to primary you or this or that. Right. Sometimes that'll work. But the problem is that's probably very popular in many of their districts in these high tax states like Illinois and New York and California. And unless they're in a poor district where the state and local taxes don't matter that much, it's going to be a problem, and he just won't have that kind of leverage over them. So I think what you will see is that on some issues, he can really bend them, and he can make trouble. But, you know, the question is, will there be a fourth vote against RFK? Will there be a fourth vote against Tulsi Gabbard? Will there be a fourth vote against Kash Patel, assuming that Mitch McConnell votes against them? Now, let me say, I think that we should treat them all differently. Tulsi Gabbard was appointed to a position called DNI, which is a relatively new post that's above all the U.S. intelligence agencies. We don't just have the CIA. We have an intelligence agency in the Defense Department and so forth. And this is supposed to coordinate them. Well, John Ratcliffe, the new head of CIA, was the DNI last time. Ask yourself, why wouldn't he take the more senior position this time? And the answer is because I think they're going to eliminate that position. I think that, and in fact, if they turn down Tulsi Gabbard, they may just eliminate it straight out. I don't know the legal issues involved, but the reason to eliminate it is that we now know on some crucial issues, the DNI under Biden administration excluded voices that were dissenting against the administration's policies. So they didn't allow the president to hear multiple voices, not that he would have necessarily understood them, but you want those multiple viewpoints to be heard at the presidential level. The issue for RFK is whether they can get him on record, as I think they will, pledging not to do anything about the vaccination issues that he's taken. That's for one group. And not to do anything on the abortion rights stuff for another group. And there may be enough conservative Republicans who think that he's too friendly to the abortion rights activists. They'll have to be convinced as well. The final one is Kash Patel.
Yes.
I think the issue with Kash Patel is that he knows where the bodies are buried. That's why the Democrats are just frightened to death over his coming in and looking at all the data. And he'll appoint a lot of people who want to root out all the malfeasance that's occurred over decades in at the FBI, and they'll have access to all of that. And I think that petrifies these people. I think they're petrified of what Ratcliffe will find at CIA as well.
When they get in,
you're going to hear all those deep state rats squealing because what we're seeing, it's like a morality play. What we want, or what I want as the person who grew up on the South Side near the stockyards, hating rats with a passion, I want the rats to be torn up by a terrier. I want the people to see that. I want them to see it because I want them to have faith in the Department of Justice again. And I don't see it unless Patel gets in there and starts stripping away all the hiding places that John Brennan and other people will say, well, it was a laptop, but it had all the hallmarks of Russia disinformation, right?
Oh boy, they're leaning on their weasel words, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Charles, to your point about the DNI thing, I worry, and you know, I'm a kid who grew up, I graduated high school a few months after 9/11.
Let's
it's a few months after 9/11 was my point, is that without eliminating DNI, do we put ourselves at risk of going backwards in the world where we then have these competing organizations that have no top dog to kind of corral, make sure we're all working together? You get an FBI that's siloed and a CIA is siloed and a NSA that's siloed. That's my worry as a kid who grew up in that. Now, yeah, that's just that my take
that's
on
right.
it. But well, I think to your point, though, to all your points, the idea that there is, you know, maybe pushback for Trump and within the Republican ranks in some of these things, whatever. I honestly see him, mandate right now. He's still in mandate mode where the country voted for him. More than half of them voted for him. He's checking off all the boxes of things he promised he was going to do. And if they stand in the way of him checking one of those boxes, it's a political death sentence for them in 2 years or whenever it is, because he does have everything going for him. And if he says, look, I promised you I would do this, and he says, you know, Susan Collins, whoever it is, you're standing in my way, the American people have seen this, vote your heart, I think they come out and they tank those careers. That's just my take on it.
I agree. I mean, to an extent, but I'm also interested in your thoughts, both of you, on another subject which is related. We have a great historian, a political scientist on our panel today, Charles Lipson.
My favorite, Charles.
And our favorite. And at the same time, Trump has already signed an executive order to release, if I'm not mistaken, the CIA files on the assassinations of Martin Luther King and John Kennedy and his brother Robert Kennedy. How are we to embrace this or to see it? And what effect will it have on us, Charles?
It depends on what's in the files.
Yeah.
If what you see is bumbling and a failed handoff, let's say, between what the CIA knew about Oswald's Russian connections and what the FBI knew and wanted to do, that'll be sad, but I would say not shocking, because we know that has happened. In fact, Jeff was mentioning that about what happened after 9/11. There was a failure to move seamlessly between the two. And there's a reason why it's hard to move. It's not just that they're two separate bureaucracies. It's that we don't want the CIA, which has a lot of power to spy on people overseas, to be using that power internally. What we now really, the public hasn't, I think, fully grasped this, but what the CIA really does is it says, okay, we can't spy on Jeff Carlin, but we can ask the British to do it.
Right.
And then they can tell us.
And not only that, Charles, but the CIA say, here's his IP address and his home address, his phone number, and everybody who's ever talked with him and the Thailand toilet paper he buys. We don't want you to use this in a nefarious reason, but if you could, let us know if you do.
Exactly. So we've got there's essentially a problem with the handoff. So I don't want to underestimate how difficult these problems are. It's not just that they're technically difficult. They raise pretty serious problems about our civil liberties. But I think with Martin Luther King, there have been for years questions about who financed James Earl Ray, about whether there were other people involved. We know that one of the things that's going to come out is that the FBI is going to be discredited because J. Edgar Hoover was just all over this guy, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
He was just all over him. And it's also going to be the case that some of the things that are going to come out about Martin Luther King are not pretty different from the way that
tarnish his image. I mean,
exactly. So,
and some of that's out there. Yeah. I mean, his infidelities or alleged infidelities. You know, some of that stuff's already out there.
Some stuff is not, like the fact that he plagiarized his
right.
He's Dr. Martin Luther King, but the doctor is itself a kind of question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I that's interesting. I mean, I think the biggest thing really that might blow back in a sense is that we're also going to see, you know, racial reasoning for a lot of these things that doesn't compote with what we do, you know, the world we're in now. And people are going to, the whole system is, you know, just more proof that DEI is needed. I think there might be a whipsaw effect on that however long that lasts. But I think that information, you know, this stuff is slides by, you know, there was a big tranche of his files Trump put out when he was president the first time. And in fact, a lot of the stuff that's included in this was stuff that was timelined to come out after being, you know, actually redacted to a point. And it was paused by Biden. And now he's coming back and saying, well, now you know, let's move on with it. Let's get this stuff out there. You know, I think it's really just checking the box to the online, bottom basement dwellers, like, you know, that I've been, in my younger years, that feed on this stuff in their ecosystems, and it's going to keep him, Trump, in good graces with them. I don't think it's really going to have a larger effect, because 9/11, you know, happened, and it was like, look, we make mistakes, we don't do things the right way as intelligence, and that was laid so bare. And then we had the FISA court situation that now everyone knows, like, oh my god, there's this weird like extrajudicial court that's existed, you know, that's out there. So I can't believe we're going to be shocked that stuff that happened 50 years ago and beyond is really going to be like, change the world we're in now. I don't see that happening. I can't imagine anything other than the fact that, yeah, there are aliens off the coast of California that the government knows about and hasn't been telling us. But I can't believe there's any way that stuff comes out.
Yeah, I think a lot of America thinks California is the aliens.
That would explain some things in the water.
And I don't want to get into the whole Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, come on.
Thing. Okay.
Okay, TMZ.
We're not living in the TMZ universe.
Yeah.
But I want to live in the universe of Chicago politics for a moment.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. We've got, besides the fact that he's not going to be listed as the top candidate for Democratic president candidate, which might make him eat even more and break another leg. What about his friend Brandon Johnson, who is so upset with Trump that when the Secret Service calls the schools to find out what's going on about a threat from the CPS to the White House, all of a sudden Brandon Johnson and his political team freak out, and the media freaks out, and it's all embarrassing. What is going on with that?
Well, first of all, I think Chicago should be proud that it doesn't just have one of the worst mayors in the country, but really,
we're number one.
But Chicago area has two. It's very impressive. It really goes beyond what we can expect. Well, Tiffany Hynyard is
Tiffany. Yeah, yeah. That's really true.
But I think the Trump administration will have huge amounts of support when it deports violent illegal criminals or people who've already been adjudicated for removal. Where the public will split is when ordinary people are removed. Now, that is, they've come in the country illegally, but they haven't committed other crimes, and certainly not other violent crimes. So what the political division that, so I think Brandon Johnson and J.B. Pritzker think that they can capitalize on that division because, but here's the problem. If you allow ICE to go into a jail, they can take out violent criminals without affecting other people.
Absolutely.
But if you force them to go out into the community, where a lot of these people are out on bail or have been released in some way, and they're in a house with other people, then Holmans has said, and understandably so, that he is not going to give a pass to all those other people. They are going to be caught up in this whole, in his whole sweep. So if the mayor and the governor, they have two vulnerabilities. One is that the people, the collateral people who are caught up or are vulnerable to being caught up are going to say, hey, you're the one who's putting us at risk. I think that's a potential problem. The other is that there are laws that say that the mayor, that public officials can't obstruct the enforcement of U.S. laws. And that's a potential risk for these people. Depends on what they do. And I haven't seen how that's going to be interpreted, but they're at risk.
How about the simple equation? Mm-hmm. When you tell black Chicagoans, mm-hmm. I've been following this for quite some time. When you tell black Chicagoans, step back, step off the mm-hmm. corner. We've got our friends from the Latin America that we have to take care of. They're mm-hmm. going to get all these resources now. Shut up. Just hush up. Step back. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to be the black Democrat who's telling them this, because
I agree. I agree.
And it goes back to that kind of core idea we were talking about earlier, that you're standing in the way of these things. And again, you know, Brandon Johnson got elected barely by half the electorate who voted for him. I mean, he mm-hmm. barely squeaked it in. And if you believe the media, the other guy was Trump's pick and was a fascist, Paul Vallis, which he isn't, because we know who he is. We're cordial with him, and if not friends with him, and have known him for a long time. He's not like these. That's not who he is. But that's just to cover my bases. Paul, love you. Not trying to call you any of that. But, you know, half the city is going to see it for what it is. And it may not be as good. I feel like they're you know, trying to, you know, in radio, we call it, you know, validating your base or working towards your base, or you're servicing your listenership. It's servicing their fan base, you know, to say, hey, look, yeah, I'm the way. But I think Pritzker has been smart in a sense. One, he's mm-hmm. been drawing regular lines between him and Brandon Johnson, and saying, you know, to show how, mm-hmm. you know, just useless right. Brandon Johnson has been, how befuddled he is by basic tasks of his job. And mm-hmm. And then he's also been very, you know, strict in saying, I support dangerous illegal immigrants being taken out of this country, full stop. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, he's very saying that to me.
What has Brandon said about that?
Brandon Sound has said, we are not working with the federal government to further their goals to immolate illegal immigrants. That's their plan. And
Charles, what happens? What happens when black Democrats stand up to oppose immigration officials when black Chicago supports them? What happens?
Well, I would say that Brandon Johnson, whose popularity is already, you basically list
his friends,
list his friends and family, and that's it. And of course, the teachers union. But I see them all as, I think this is a really silly position that they put themselves in, and politically vulnerable position that they put themselves in.
I agree. I mean, especially if you, you know, take it to the neighborhoods, right? You have, you've had Tom Dart come out and say recently that, you know, this, you know, we'll put a monitor on you and release thing. He's like, we're going to wash our hands of it. We can't control it. It doesn't work.
People would... purge. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, that's not the point of my comment, John. I'm just saying that the walls are crumbling on the system. And so these people are people who are violent, who have or are accused of violence, if we want to be politically correct, you know, are out in communities. And the people in the communities are seeing this increase of, wait a minute, you know, the jail's population is going down. The bad people in my neighborhood numbers are going up, and right. Nobody's doing anything about it. It's going to be obvious that it's not working, and their plan for fixing everything. And they came out with, the city came out with this past week with this, you know, this glowing statement about how murders were down year over year, and this was down. Oh, although robberies were up, and break-ins were way up, and car vehicular theft was way up. So they're trying to scrambling at this, and I think it's, the proof is going to hit the pavement, and people are going to be like, "What? There's no way my neighborhood has gone to crap in the last 2 years."
So you think you're taking the controversial position that Brandon Johnson's not doing a good job?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, I'm saying that they're going to see him as his go-to Trump card. Pardon my parlance, but everyone's a racist is not going to hold water anymore.
I think that's a big point, and I think it's true nationwide. I think that they've cried wolf so often about so many issues that and when they can't find anything specific, they go to the term systemic racism. That's like a magic word, and I just think that people are not buying it.
Right.
Listen, when it comes up that Al Sharpton was screaming about the Greeks and, quote, them homos in the caves, whatever he said, I'm thinking these arguments, these Marxist arguments, have lost all force, and they're now to be ridiculed. I mean, the entire business is pathetic.
Well, and I would say, since you mentioned Al Sharpton, a distinguished public servant, if we've ever had one, his only real platform was on the mainstream media, but more and more people are getting their news and their commentary the way that this podcast is, by going online and listening to what they want. Now and that has led to an absolute meltdown in the mainstream media, and and beyond losing audience, they've lost trust. Who, other than the people in Georgetown and on the Upper West Side, trust the New York Times to give you honest reporting? Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And that may have been true in the past, but we didn't know it. Now we know. And it's just painfully obvious. And look at the change in the LA Times. The owner of the LA Times has come out and said, we made a mistake to endorse Karen Bass, and we made a mistake to endorse Gavin Newsom. I mean, that's really dramatic.
Yeah.
And when they say that, then the fires hit.
Well, that's the thing.
Everything goes to hell. Yeah.
I mean, I've been referencing this most of our conversation, and you know, my perspective as being, you know, kid came to age in the '90s and beyond. You know, if you took a family, you know, the nuclear family in the '90s, and said, "Hey, you know what? Mm-hmm. We want to raise your taxes because we're going to go to war to try to secure our oil." Oh, okay, sure, fine. Hey, we're going to go to and then move forward to 2000. Hey, we need to raise your taxes because we're going to go to war to stop terrorism. Okay, yeah, I get it. That was bad. Let's do that. And then they ran out of. Then you pivot to, hey, we're going to raise your taxes because we got to make sure the automotive industry is safe because there's some people work there. So, you know, we're like, okay, I guess, sure. And then you come out and Obama's electing, or, you know, Obama's like, oh, you know, the world's going to boil like a baked potato in 50 years. So we're going to raise your taxes to solve that. And like, oh, sure. I guess I want my grandkids to be alive. And then you move forward and it's like, hey, we're going to raise your taxes because we want to make sure that these, they, them, though, that whatever your pronouns are all written on every placard and every governmental agency and every paperwork and everything we do, we're going to raise your taxes. You're like, oh, okay, I guess.
And we're going to change your military.
Right. And then my house burns down and the government has nothing to show for it. What do you expect people to do? I mean, they've got to wake up at some point.
Jeff, you're asking people to enjoy a big heaping platter of smelt with lemon. Enjoy it. Because that's what they can eat now. Right.
Well, I think Jeff is right. I would add to it is that when you tell them that we've got to save the environment, and you don't give them data on how they're how eliminating these internal combustion engine cars are going to do that. And the cars themselves are dramatically more expensive than internal combustion cars. You get pushback. I mean, the dogs just aren't eating the dog food. And so I think I have a dwindling group of friends who are, well, in general, but I certainly have a dwindling group of friends who are on the other side of political issues. And they were literally complaining this week because Trump had not brought down the price of eggs. I thought, are you nuts? And I tried to put it a little more gently, but
economists.
I said, he hadn't done it in the first 4 days, but maybe he'll do it in day six. But I think that the drill, baby, drill is going to be very popular if it brings down the price that people are paying at the pump. But I also think that to the extent that we want to do anything about global warming, and I hope we do, the answer to that is going to be in making alternatives cheaper and more reliable than the more polluting alternatives. I think part of that's going to be nuclear. But the answer to all of this is going to lie in what India and China do. As long as China is building coal-fired power plants because they're cheapest way to get electricity, there's just nothing that we can do to offset that. But what we can do to offset it is literally to make it cheaper to do things the way we want to do them.
And I have faith in American ingenuity and, you know, drive that when things do start to change, when the atmosphere does, you know, oxygen levels start to fall and CO2 rises and CO rises, and we are, people are starting to impact, and we're seeing fires in places and all that stuff, that we're going to be able to come up with ways to mitigate these things, because, you know, that's what humanity does. That's what's kept us in the running for best of the best as far as animals are, you know, the planet's concerned, for 50,000 years. So I think, you know, that's my hope. That's where I believe.
My dog is listening and he's not happy with what you're saying.
Jeff and Charles, that's all very fine, but what does that have to do with the price of good dumplings from Katie's Dumpling House or something like that? I mean, what is going on with this country if we can't reduce the price of dumplings immediately?
Well, I agree with that. I'm a big one for dumplings and wonton soup and all the rest. By the way, the cost issue there is going to come with pushback on illegal immigration.
That's a good, really good point. That is gonna, you know, he's gonna have to counter that to even have a prayer of trying to bring prices down.
And I think what will counter it will be increasing mechanization.
Sure, automation, using AI.
But I don't think, yeah. And I think there's gonna be a fight, a coming fight over work requirements for welfare.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to see that Saudi Arabia is going to play ball, and they've already committed $600 billion over the next 4 years to our company, that they're going to be seeing what's happening in the Middle East right now and trying to make sure.
By the way, this will really hurt Russia.
Right.
Russia has only one product to sell.
Mm-hmm.
The same is really true of Iran. Iran is going to be under tremendous pressure because the Biden policy was completely wrong. They said they were keeping all the pressure on, but they really took it off. And they took it off because they thought this is the way that you built
coalition building, right?
Yeah, and that they'll come along with us, but it just turned out to be totally wrong. That when you make mistakes in the marketplace, unless it's a complete monopoly, if you have a corner grocery and you have the wrong menu, the wrong prices, the wrong location, any of those things, you go out of business unless you change quickly.
Right.
If you're at the DMV or you're the foreign policy of the president of the United States, what makes you get more efficient? Well, almost nothing, unless you're tossed out of office.
Yeah, I it'll be all obvious. I mean, we've talked about this before. It'll come down to where the rubber meets the road in Trump. You know, he's promised a lot. He's doing a lot. That's great. You know, but when the price of eggs hasn't changed in 6 months, or if it has, that's when we'll really have the tail of the tape. But Charles, you mentioned dumplings and wonton soup earlier. Do you got a go-to place in Chicago? Or maybe I'm looking for like a somewhere near the university campus. Maybe you got a spot that
people
don't know about?
I have three places that I really like in Chinatown. And I go to Evergreen, especially when my kids come home, because I love chow fun. And they make a good chow fun. I go to Emperor's Palace, partly because the emperor asked me to. but they have a very good luncheon special. And then there's a place. Chinatown has a wonderful mall. And there's several places there that I go, including one where you can get Peking duck without having to give 24 hours notice. So I love the fact that I'm sort of 10 minutes away from Chinatown and can go there. It's absolutely great.
But you can't make handmade Chinese dumplings by robot. Doesn't work.
Do you remember, this is way too young for you, Jeff, there is a famous scene in the first Lucille Ball show where
the chocolates
is coming out on the assembly line. I believe they'll be able to make a lot of this stuff. We had a whole series of illegal immigrants coming to our house to make them, but now, you know, that we're out of luck. So I don't know what'll happen. I think the main thing, let me give you, I often look for things that are not said, things that go unsaid. Donald Trump, nobody has said lame duck. Have you heard anybody say it?
I haven't.
Why? He is a lame duck. That is, he can't succeed himself. But he is, I had a friend who told me today that it was like his first term was most presidents' second term, where they don't accomplish very much and they're held up. And his second term is like the first term, where you're getting a lot done. And he's doing so much. And I think that that's the biggest issue. It's not what he's doing on the border, important as that is. It's not just what he's doing on DEI, important as that is. It's the whole ball of wax. He's just determined to move as fast as he can. And I think he knows that he has until the midterm, at the latest, to get as much done as he can. And I think he has big ambitions. And the ambitions, and what he's doing with FEMA, let me just say one more thing about that, because we started with that, with the people in North Carolina, where it was really touching, and where FEMA's failure was just obvious because they've had months to do it and they couldn't do it. And of course, he was furious over the fact that they decided to pass by every house that had a Trump symbol on it, or Trump sign. You remember that?
Yes.
And that clearly showed that the agency was not just incompetent, but politicized.
And it's best to break it up and to let.
Correct.
The federal government is not as efficient as the local governments when it comes to what the people need on the ground.
That's true. And if a local government is inefficient, as we were talking about L.A. and California perhaps being, you can vote the people out.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be shakeups all around, because I think the underlying message is incompetence won't be tolerated.
Charles Lipson, you don't have to worry about incompetence, because you are supremely competent, sir. As again, I say, and I say this again for everyone listening, if only we could have had Charles Lipson as our professor in college.
Yes.
It would have been.
Well, thank you, John.
It would have made things a lot easier, or maybe a lot more interesting.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. Teaching is one of the great professions in life, and it's sad to see when our schools are not doing the job that they should, and I hope that they will get back to it, both at the K-12 level and at the university
Charles, level. Charles, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Charles. Me. Always an honor.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Jeff.
I'm just going to say, for Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus, University of Chicago, RITSMA Chair, you can find him at Charles_Lipson, and go to charleslipson.com to read his fine work. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend and master of pies, lover of cats, even though they don't kill as many rats as do dogs.
That's true. Jeff. That's true. More birds, which I don't like.
And songbirds.
I know.
And for me, John Cass, Editor-in-Chief of John Cass News, we always get a good cup of common sense. Join us again next time, won't you, on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.